You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Today on the On Enquirer podcast, Joe Hendrickson, City Suburban Hoops Report. Guy I've respected for a long time, have talked to for a really long time, and there are a few guys I like chatting to more about basketball and basketball recruiting than Joe Hendrickson of City Suburban Hoops Report, and he brings it. He's the goods, and he brings the goods this week, talking about one of his favorite prospects. That's Illini commit Merez Johnson, who just had a big week on the national stage, both at the NBA PA Top 100 earlier this month, and then follows that up with a strong Peach Jam performance. Seems like he's rising a little bit in these rankings, and he's been all Illini. So we talked to Joe Hendrickson about Merez Johnson's development, what he feels about him as a prospect, and what he thinks he could add to Illinois. So great insight from Joe on that, but we also talk about more in-state prospects, including Jason Jaxtus. We get a good scouting report. I think it's a balanced scouting report from Joe Hendrickson on the Yorkville 2024 big man, maybe stretch four. Joe shares some thoughts on him. Also on Phoenix Gill's development and what he's looking forward to seeing him his junior season, as well as Jeremiah Fears. And Joe's got a take on Jeremiah Fears that I think is really worth listening to. And dive into a couple bigger topics with Joe, including, is leaving the state, as a lot of these high school prospects are doing, is it good for these guys? Is it beneficial to leave the state and go to some of these prep schools? Joe talks about that, and also talk about the impact of the transfer portal on prep recruiting, and even towards the end, talk about the impact on the high majors, the mid majors. So it's really good insight from Joe on that. Just one of my favorite guys to talk to. We are also self-loathing White Sox fans, so we chatted a little bit off the air about that, and we don't know where we're going. We don't know about the White Sox, but that's not why you tuned into this podcast. The other thing I want to hit on before we get to Joe is Northwestern football has fired head coach Pat Fitzgerald. I got to be honest with you. I am still reeling from that news. I am still just taking time to process that is the actual reality. And I'm not saying whether they made the right decision, wrong decision. Like, Pat Fitzgerald, with the hazing that happened, and nobody argues it happened, people can argue about the severity, and they are. There are allegations that this was really severe, maybe even sexual assault, and then there's some that are saying this is overblown. And a lot of the players, unexpectedly, are coming to Pat Fitzgerald's defense. But Pat Fitzgerald, whether it was willful ignorance, or at best, right, or at worst, he knew the hazing, did nothing to stop it, or as some players are suggesting, former players that have stepped out, that he might have encouraged it. That is enough to get fired. Now, the way Northwestern has handled it, and I'll dive into this, leaves a lot to be desired, and I'd have huge questions about that. But he is the golden boy. Like, this is the golden boy of Northwestern football. He has made such a positive impact on that program, both as a two-time Big Ten Defender of the Year, the best player in modern history of Northwestern, helped lead them to two, what I think nowadays are BCS bowl games, right? They made the Rose Bowl in 96, and then 97, the 96 season into 97, they made the Citrus Bowl. That Northwestern, for most kids my age or younger, adults my age or younger, Northwestern's been pretty plucky, right, since Pat Fitzgerald became a player there. But before that, they were a doormat in the Big Ten. For the last three decades, Pat Fitzgerald has been a huge reason that Northwestern football has been good in the Big Ten. winning Big Ten West championships in 2018 and 2020. For them to consistently make bowl games and then to start winning bowl games. They won four straight bowl games in Pat Fitzgerald's, the end of his tenure here. He is everything Northwestern wanted. He stayed there. He's always been tied to programs like Penn State, USC. He kind of had this all-American boy image. And to be honest with you, in the times I've interacted with Pat Fitzgerald, I don't know Pat Fitzgerald that well, but I've been around him. I've asked him questions at media days and press conferences and all that. He's charismatic. He's outgoing. He's a great face of the program, or had been, for Northwestern. So for all of that to just implode like this, it's just a stunning development that Pat Fitzgerald and his alma mater, where he made such a great impact on that football program, like this is a statue guy at Northwestern if this would have continued to go. Like, it felt like he was going to be there, and Pat Fitzgerald's, what, 50? He's going to be there for another 20 years, and he was going to be their guy. And now, you know, I don't want to make judgments. Like, I think people want to do black and white, that Pat Fitzgerald's evil or he's all good or whatever it is. We all live in this gray area, but this guy had this golden kind of aura about him at his alma mater, Northwestern, and now there's just this very gray legacy. But obviously, this hazing seems extreme. Like, I was a part of a fraternity, okay? Now, we didn't do much like that. Never got to this level. There were some little initiation things. Nobody was ever in danger. But some people might look down on some of the stuff that even I went through in 5-6 years before I was initiated. We had a huge hazing scandal at my fraternity that was way worse than what I went through. But I enjoyed my time in the fraternity. I'm sure a lot of Northwestern players thought this was not a big deal. Seems like a lot of them thought it was not a big deal, but it was hazing. Like, nobody's arguing that. And for Pat Fitzgerald not to know, no, I don't buy that. Like, he had to know something, and then you come with all these details of the whiteboard, the clapping. We can debate the details. I don't know if we'll ever know the full thing, but the way Northwestern handled this is a complete lack of leadership. This has been a train wreck from their leadership, which is all pretty new in their roles. But the new Northwestern president, Michael Shill, how do you go from a 2-week slap on the wrist suspension in the middle of July, when Pat Fitzgerald was probably on vacation anyway, and then just fire him 3 days later, based primarily on the same information we already knew? Most of this stuff that has come out, and kudos to the Daily Northwestern, most of the stuff that has come out through their really good reporting — Medill School is a really good journalism school, even if you don't like Northwestern — to change your mind like that just based on public perception, it's ludicrous. It is absolutely ludicrous, and it's really opened them up to the lawsuit from Pat Fitzgerald. I think they'll settle at some point. Pat Fitzgerald's going to get a big payout for all of this. But boy, this leadership looks pretty awful. Like, if you're Northwestern, you get this report, and we're all reading this, and we're like, this is really weird. Borderline, could it be sexual assault? Like, none of us were there. Like, but some of this report, like, there's some stuff that makes you feel uncomfortable, right? And there's definitely hazing. If you wanted to keep Pat Fitzgerald that bad, and understanding his history, I can understand why the donors, why the board of trustees, why the president, who's new there, the AD, who inherited Pat Fitzgerald, who's probably got more power, right, than Derek Gregg, the new athletic director. I can understand that, but, like, you have to come out, release the report findings, as uncomfortable as that is, suspend Pat Fitzgerald for a few games or give him a harsh punishment, and then have Pat Fitzgerald go in front of cameras and say, I let this get too bad. Like, this got too bad. I was negligent at times. Like, I need to have better control of my program. This is not what we stand for, and we will do better, and we're going to have these things in place. Like, make a passionate plea. I don't know if all that works to save Pat Fitzgerald, but at least gives you an opportunity. Like, that's the crisis management they needed here. But no, they thought an old school Friday news dump would just let this go by. And maybe it does without the Daily Northwestern's reporting. You know, and as somebody in the media, like, the Chicago Tribune does not have a Northwestern reporter anymore. The Sun-Times does not have a Northwestern reporter anymore. But the Daily Northwestern was able to report this, corroborate it. And that's led to action. And that's what we're taught in journalism school, is to hold powerful people to account. And they have. And now Pat Fitzgerald has been held to account. But this reminds me a lot of Illinois during the Mike Thomas era, because there's a real lack of leadership and control of a program. Like, Derek Gregg does not have control of his house right now at Northwestern. And remember, he was not the first choice for Northwestern, but Mike Pulisky, who was hired to replace Jim Phillips, and Jim Phillips, I'm sure, will have to answer some questions at ACC Media Day. But Mike Pulisky had to resign 10 days into his tenure because of his handling of accusations of sexual harassment and racism within the cheerleading program. Now we get the football hazing scandal, and yesterday, Danny Parkins of 670 Score is the first to report the allegations of a toxic culture inside the baseball program and a coach that Gregg hired. So, remember, Mike Thomas, during his tenure, two abuse scandals under hires he made, Tim Beckman and Matt Beaumont, and then multiple player arrests in men's basketball. It just felt like, where is the accountability? Where is the leadership in that program for Illinois back in the early 2010s? And it feels the same right now for Northwestern. Like, sometimes, you know, Fitzgerald kind of shows us, you know, who we think are leaders. It might be hard to perceive that every day. But Northwestern certainly seems to have a lack of leadership at the top right now. And I'm going to be interested to see what happens with Gregg and Schill moving forward, because Northwestern faces a long, rocky road ahead. You know, just talking with some people, the fan and donor base seems fractured. They have plans for an $800 million stadium renovation, or not renovation, construction. And Pat Ryan was a big Pat Fitzgerald fan. Pat Ryan's the big supporter for Northwestern. Is that going to happen now? Now you face this lawsuit with Fitzgerald. Could be pretty expensive there. And we already knew Northwestern football was not in a great place here. I mean, they had the COVID season where they won the Big Ten West, but three of the last 4 years, they've won one game in the Big Ten. They lost 11 straight games to end the season. So the Northwestern our grandparents or our parents grew up with could be returning, where they are a Big Ten doormat, because they were already struggling in the age of NIL, the transfer portal. But Pat Fitzgerald kind of got them through most of that, or, you know, helped them be competitive and really successful during the modern era. But they were already starting to struggle a little bit on that front. And now you throw this into it, where you're going to have some fractures. You know, a lot of academics on campus are not fans of sports, and we've seen that at Illinois too. But that's where you need a leader like Josh Whitman to stand up and kind of unite people. I don't see it with Northwestern right now. The thing they got going for them is they're in the Big Ten, and they got money. But this is the toughest Big Ten job by far. It's one of the toughest Power 5 jobs in the country. So I don't think they're going to have a lot of coaches who are doing well right now pounding down their door. But it is one of 30-something, 32 I think it's going to be, Big Ten or SEC jobs. So David Shaw would be the guy I would call first. I don't know if it happens now or in November or whenever it is. He's still just 50 years old. He led Stanford to great success. Stanford and Northwestern have very similar profiles. Bronco Mendenhall, I don't know if he'd come out of retirement for this job. You know, I've seen Matt Campbell mentioned. Boy, that'd be a home run hire for Northwestern. But like, Matt Campbell's got to be thinking, hey, if I don't leave for one of these schools now, is it going to be there? Like, is, you know, do you stay long enough at Iowa State that it doesn't work out? Like, I think he's taken Iowa State to as high as it's going to be. So would he be interested? Struggle to see that. Jeff Monken's always mentioned for these Power 5 programs, but they kind of shy away because of his option offense. He's going more to a spread now. Maybe that'll help him, but he's an Illinois native. I think doing something different can work at Northwestern. Hiring a guy from West Point might not be a bad optics kind of thing. And you can go to the Young Shot Hot coordinators, Sharon Moore, Sean Lewis, Colorado, Tommy Reese. Do you go get another alum? Mike Kafka, New York Giants offense coordinator, former Northwestern quarterback. Would he want to do that when he could be a head coach in the NFL soon? I don't know. They certainly have a tough sell. I think you have a sell because you're in the Big Ten, but do you trust your leaders right now to do it? You know, Northwestern was such an envy, really, of Illinois. 10 years ago, when you have Fitzgerald competing against, and his charismatic personality against Beckman, even against Lovie Smith, right? And they rattled off all of these wins. Bielma comes in here, changes the thing. Bielma and Pat Fitzgerald pretty close, by the way. So I'm interested to ask Brett Bielma about this and just his reaction to all of it eventually. But this has been stunning. This has been a stunning fall from somebody that I thought would be at Northwestern forever. But I guess what we got to learn is, we've seen Joe Paterno, we've seen Jim Tressel, we've seen Art Briles, we've seen some of these coaches, Bob Huggins at West Virginia, his alma mater. And boy, that story kind of gone under the radar. That's an odd story. Sometimes you stay that long, bad things can happen. But obviously, Pat Fitzgerald, for him not to know this, I just have huge doubts. And if he did know, or just willingly didn't know, in air quotes, then this was worth firing. But it's just, I still can't get my arms around it, because it's Pat freaking Fitzgerald and what he means to that Northwestern program. What are they without him? I don't know. Because really, it's been mostly 30 years since you've had to ask that question. It's kind of a scary spot for Northwestern to be. All right, when we come back, Joe Hendrickson, City Suburban Hoops Report. I'm Merez Johnson, Jason Jaxtus, Jeremiah Fears, Phoenix Gill, and how the transfer portal has affected prep recruiting. That is next on the Illini Inquirer podcast. All right, so one of my favorite guys to talk to on this podcast. We always appreciate his time. He's got great insight, and that is Joe Hendrickson, City Suburban Hoops Report and Chicago Sun-Times contributor. Follow him on Twitter, at Joe Hoops Report. Well, Joe, we're kind of back to a focus on some prep basketball recruiting. I made that point on this podcast a little bit. It's nice to see some preps get some shine in this era of the transfer portal getting most of the focus.
Yeah, and also for Illinois specifically, because you're talking about a program, and not to the fault of their own, because there have not been a ton of high major prospects of late in Illinois. And here they are, got on board with a top-ranked prospect early on, secured him, and it's played out perfectly for them. You know, they've got a relationship. It's not even a question of, you know, basketball is different than football. Football, there's always that concern of decommitments and taking other visits, and basketball's not that way. But Merez just continues to climb. Merez Johnson is without question the top prospect in Illinois, from the Chicago area here, and boom, they locked him up early, and he's flourishing. He's shining, and Illinois fans, the coaching staff, anybody involved in Illinois recruiting, which is a second sport for fans, you've got to be ecstatic, because I just think Merez is everything to do with winning. He is about all the right things. I know it keeps being said over and over again, but it's the one attribute I don't think you can talk enough about, because it's what makes programs tick. It makes what programs win, and he brings all those intangibles. Does he have things to work on? Yes, but he's physically ready from day one. I can't even imagine what he's going to be like with Fletch and what a college strength and conditioning program is going to do for him. But what's in his head. What's in his head is, I mean, just he wants to do all the things others don't want to do. And you get a big man that are already hard to come by in this day and age. It's just a huge win for Illinois and a boon for, you know, this recruiting class, whatever it ends up being.
Heck, it was almost 2 years ago, Joe, that he committed. And we asked you on this podcast what you thought of him, and you were a fan of him then. And he's kind of a throwback. It kind of reminds me of like the Tracy Abrams days of kids committing this early. It's a pretty big rarity nowadays. But what kind of development have you seen from him during the last year, particularly what's been on display in the national stage the last couple of weeks with the NBA PA Top 100 camp and then Peach Jam?
I think it's a combination of assertiveness and confidence, and he was always a confident player because he was a high-profile kid early on, but it's that assertiveness and the production going from here and there to, okay, I'm doing this every single day in terms of numbers, the effort, the energy, but figuring it out, how to do it, how to get it done. I think he's matured in that way, and utilizing his strengths. That's a, you know, high school players have a tough time sometimes understanding them true selves of who they are as a player and what is going to lead to production. Merez doesn't try to do too much, and I think that helped. I think he was doing that early in his career, trying to do a little bit too much out of his comfort zone, becoming or trying to be a little too perimeter oriented. Mm-hmm. I think he went to, you know, use that blue collar approach to his benefit, and that's why he's progressed in terms of productivity. Does he have room to grow as a player? Yeah, I mean, all high school players do. Is he a pretty unpolished offensive player right now? Yes, but there's things that he can do without having that ideal skill set to still produce, and that is get on the glass, you know, loose balls, keep balls alive, run in transition, finish, all these things that he can do with his physical attributes and strengths. He's doing at a high level right now.
Yeah, Joe, and it's just all that stuff seems to translate to the college game and the college role that he will have. Like if he reminds me a little bit of Ty Rogers. If you rebound, defend, you focus on those winning
very
things.
Similar.
Yeah, you're going to find a way to get on the court. But we do think, at least most people I talk to think, there's another level he can get to. So for his development, what do you think is the key for Illinois once he gets here to develop him and to complement him on the court?
Well, the compliment part is going to be important with what pieces you put around him inside the four and the five and interchangeable. Ideally, what you'd love for Morez to be able to do is be that interchangeable four or five. And he's got to be more of that four. You know, I just think the decision-making with the ball in his hands, that coupled with just being able to stick that little jump. It's not broke. I mean, that jumper has ways to go. But if he can showcase a little bit of that from the skill area, that's going to raise his level. Because he's not the somewhat of an issue would be, you know, he's not 6'10", 6'11".
Yeah.
You know, he's 6'8", 6'8 and a half. And he is more 5 to me right now than 4. Some probably will disagree with me on that. But that's just how I see it. But, again, we can get back to being that interchangeable big man piece. I think that's going to be a huge advantage for him and any coaching staff that can utilize him in that way.
He's one of the few kids who's sticking around in state here, Joe.
Yes.
He goes from St. Rita to Thornton, going to play with Ty Streets, who obviously is coached with Mean Streets at Thornton. What do you expect out of him, or what do you want to see out of him as a senior?
Well, kudos for Merez. I mean, he if you ever talk to him, he's a, you know, everybody is said a lot, the cliche. Great kid. Man, he is. I mean, besides being about the right things, just the way he articulates things to you and what is important to him, mm-hmm. Stood out to me even during that whole, you know, everybody gets uptight about all the transfers in high school basketball now. They forced this kid's hand. I mean, the program was in shambles. The coach left. I mean, it was just a bad situation at St. Rita. But to his credit, he found the importance of what it means to stay home, to play and be around family and friends. And that's not the mindset of top flight players around the country and even in this state, as we've seen. There is something of value to him to do that here. So, you know, Thornton is a little bit of a rebuild. They've added two other transfers. So, you know, I have an event in January, when sides collide, Thornton will be in it, and I'm excited because I think they're going to be, you know, obviously with Merez, but they could be a potential top 10 team from a team that really wasn't very good, very uncharacteristic. Like, but Merez is just what he is. He's going to be a Mr. Basketball front runner. And it's going to be interesting to see how he can put that team on his back.
Yeah.
Because there were so many pieces at St. Rita, even though he was the key figure at St. Rita with James Brown and Noyes Indecitis and all these high majors, but he's kind of the sole guy at Thornton now. So it'll be interesting to see just kind of how he handles that role as a senior.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Joe, we've talked about the state's best talent leaving the state. Like, we've talked about it a lot, and it continues to happen. But we want them to stay here so we can see them. I think there's a great history of high school basketball in the state, now being back in Champaign for the state championships. But does this help them to leave? Like, what are the benefits and negatives of this for the kids?
I ask this question with college coaches all the time, yeah. And it's almost always off the record. They don't and every situation is so different, Jeremy, so it's hard to paint a brush for everybody.
Right.
Because, but by and large, I have just kind of heard that, and my opinion is kind of goes with this, I just look at Jalen Brunson still did what he did. Max Christie did what he did. I don't think there's one avenue that is perfect.
Right.
It just comes down to what's important to, you know, Cole Serta at Bloomington Central Catholic has decided to leave. Go IMG. I mean, me personally, that third decision. In Notre Dame, I mean, all these different schools have different opinions of what they should and shouldn't do. And I just don't know if there's a specific – I'm not really answering your question very well. I don't like it, but I'm just so biased.
Right. Right.
I talked to a coach the other day. He goes, Joe, just get a kid – get somebody that can rebound for him in the gym. go work out. You know, there's just so much value to being the piece at the guy at your high school and playing some high stakes games that matter with you as the focal point, as opposed to maybe going to a prep school somewhere and being the sixth man or seventh man, not being able to do that. But then again, you know, there's some situations where kids are playing in practice against nobody all day long at a very low level. And they're practicing every day, competing against Division I players every day in practice. So it goes beyond just the games.
Right.
So there's value, I get it. I just don't think it's the be-all, end-all, and it's proven that it doesn't have to be that way by, you know, some of those, I could go on and on, with names like Jalen Brunson and Max Christie and Cameron Christie and, you know, even Jeremy Fears to a degree, you know, left, came back. I don't like when I hear reasons being for McDonald's nominations, rankings. And I hear that more than the development piece, to be honest. So that stuff is just like, come on, who cares?
Right.
But all that stuff is because you're getting that high level play and competition, Jeremy, in AAU. I mean,
right.
And McDonald's games, they really don't care how you do as a senior in high school. That's all established and done prior to that. They're not even seen in high school much. So anyway, it's just a wide range of answers for individual kids.
Joe, I want to ask you about a few other kids in state. Illinois shown a lot of interest in Jason Jaxtus, 2024 big man out of Yorkville. Illinois comes in with one of his first high major offers here. What kind of development have you seen on him? Because like, he's the kind of guy, like if he did develop, you think would be a good compliment to somebody like Merez, it feels like.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm a straight shooter with all my in my recruiting service, and I have him as a mid-major, you know. I get what people see. I'm actually from Yorkville, but grew up there. And you've seen his development over the years as this late-blooming, developing big 6'10". I see what Illinois sees in him. I look at the past experiments of the Leibs and the Jermaine Hamlins and the flyers you take, and you hope one of them hits. He would not be ready for a while at a Big Ten school. He just has, from a physical standpoint, particularly. But yeah, he this past weekend he started good, kind of faded a little bit. What's interesting, and again, I give credit to Illinois. They do what they want to do, and in terms of, and that's what all college programs should do. But again, and I'll usually when a high major offers, a lot foul.
Yeah,
it just happens. You just saw it this weekend with Angel Ciaravino from Mount Carmel. Finally, one offered, and boom, 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 three, four others followed right away. Jax just came out this weekend. Still, you know, he's a coveted mid-major guy. You know, mid-majors would love to have him. I still think he's a developmental piece at the mid-major level. That's going to take some time. But, you know, he's a skill big, 6'10". He can move. Just physically he's not ready. And the productivity, the consistent production is partly the lack of it to a degree is a result of that lack of physicality and body strength and trying to survive on that circuit when the level rises up.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of high majors are doing things differently now, Jeremy. The recruiting model is different. This isn't specifically towards Jackson and Illinois, but there are 13 scholarships, and you cannot keep 13 players happy nowadays. You just can't. There's a lot of programs that don't want 13. They want, you know, 12. Keep one open. There's the NIL factor. Can you back end that roster with some NIL guys that aren't going to chew up any money? You try to find ones that are, you know, again, like a player like Jax, it's not specifically him, but maybe is okay with the idea of sitting, redshirting, developing, and again, with all those other things, not eating up NIL, there's just a puzzle now in recruiting and roster management that is way different than it was just 3 years ago. And I'm not saying that's what Illinois sees. I'm just saying that's the case, and that's how I view a lot of these scholarship situations at the high major level.
No, I've thought, man, could Illinois get back to more in-state recruiting because those guys might stay around a little bit longer. In developmental pieces, you might have one or two spots available for that. So I don't disagree with that thought. I want to ask you, too, I mean, when your name's Gil and you're in Illinois, you're a pretty good basketball player. A lot of fans are going to notice in Illinois offered Phoenix Gil last year. Doesn't do the AAU thing, which I find really interesting with Kendall and Phoenix's decision on that, but seemed to have a pretty good event at Riverside Brookfield. So what have you made of his development over the past year, Joe?
It's interesting, the AAU thing. And again, I don't think there's a one road or one fit for every kid and family, but it is interesting because I have morphed as an evaluator over the years from being like, I don't know what the percentage would be, 60-40 high school favorable just to watch versus now like 70-30 AAU or 60-40 AAU. And now I value getting both of them so much that you miss it when you don't see it. So I'd love to see, you know, Phoenix Gil play on the circuit, and because it does, the it's a two different animals,
right?
But there are higher level athletes, there are higher level, you know, players that are all on one court together. It's just fact. So he's just been super, super steady. He hasn't had this massive rise. It's just this steady progression. He, you know, the one thing, and I hate when you have to compare to other players, let alone your own father, he doesn't have that explosiveness, the type of athleticism that Kendall had. But, you know, he's probably a little small right now. But again, he's still maturing physically, right, developing. I think he's getting more athletic each time I see him. You know, I have him right in that mid plus, you know, high minus range on the bubble of becoming a legit high major. And I just think he's a ton of substance to him. And I just think he's not going to be this flashy, eye-opening player, but one that you really, really gravitate towards the more you watch. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, his rise this year. 'Cause I love the jumps they make, you know, from that classification from when you finish in March till November. And I expect him at St. Ignatius to have that type of a jump even without that AAU experience.
Feels like substance would be a really high remark by an evaluator, Joe.
Yeah. Well, and we talk about Ty Rogers. We talk about Merez Johnson. You know, not that they don't have other things, but there is a ton of substance to those two kids. And, you know, I don't know. Every roster is built differently. Every coach has importance of characteristics and attributes. And they say – every coach is going to say they want that. Right. But every program in the country does not have it.
Right. Joe, I want to ask you about a guy who is transferring out of state but played in state last year, Jeremiah Fears. I saw him, I think, a year ago. And I was like, oh, this is the Steph Curry generation. Jeremiah Fears feels like he is a part of that. Just shot maker, playmaker. But what have you seen from his development? Because it seems like Illinois has started to prioritize him.
Same stage. Again, we're comparing family members here, but same stage. I from the day I saw Jeremiah, I've liked Jeremiah every step of the way as a higher level prospect and player than Jeremy. Jeremiah is my cup of tea. He is my type of player. Bucket getter, plays with you know, a pace that I love while also staying in control. And he's a bona fide, legitimate high major. I'd love for him to add another inch, and you get nitpicky with size and stuff, but he's plenty big enough as far as high major. But yeah, he's electric, and he's been playing up, obviously, in age group at AAU. It's disappointing. I would love to have seen him. He'd be by far away my top-ranked prospect in that class if he were still in Illinois. So, yeah, he's a no-brainer, high major. I think he's on his way to being a potential, you know, McDonald's All-American, which Jeremy was as well. I just think Jeremiah is a better player, a better prospect, and a higher upside.
Joe, before I let you go, I do want to touch on the big picture of the transfer portal in all of this. How has it impacted high school recruiting from what you've seen?
Oh, big time. But I think it's about to change a little bit, Jeremy, with the COVID year being gone, coming up another year, well, another year of it. But I keep repeating this in interviews I do and stuff, but you do the math, 350, 360 Division I programs, they average two and a half seniors on a roster. All those kids are able to come back. That's, do the math, 800, 900 scholarships that are floating out there are eaten up by these kids that college coaches want because they've got 4 years of college experience under their belt. So that's 900 scholarships that are, you know, being utilized that otherwise wouldn't be there, and somebody feels the effect of that, and that is junior college kids and high school players. So I think it'll clear that. That'll clear up a little bit going forward here after we get through the COVID kids of the extra year of eligibility. I think smart high school kids and families and their people are realizing not to play around anymore. If you find a fit, you find a place that you really like, you need to snap it up. Last year's class, Jeremy, I have to go back and look, but of my top 20 prospects, I think 19 of them were committed by time school started. And if you go back 3, 4, 5 years ago, there were always, I could go back to the previous year and where they were still taking visits in September and taking their officials, you know, first week in October. And that used to be the time where college coaches put everything in, get them in on a football weekend, get signed, sealed, and get it done, you know. And some of the high profile kids are still doing that. But those low majors and mid majors, they would even try to, you know, work that and manage those weekends. And now families are like, you know what? We like this place. We got a great opportunity. This is a great fit academically, socially, basketball wise. Boom, let's get this done. So I think that sped up the process a little bit. Meanwhile, what's pushing back is some of the colleges are whoa, you know, slow down. We want to, you know, manage our roster. We want to see what we have because we want to see what we get in the portal in the spring. So it is a little, you know, odd that the two forces are coming together in that way, but it's definitely changed. It's altered everything. In springtime, it's just a mess. It's just, they're going to, the calendar is proposed for recruiting is to clear up April for college coaches. There won't be any live periods next April if it's approved. where there's two live weekends now. So those college coaches were, and I can't get over being involved with the way I am. And I know they've cited this too in interviews probably with you, and you've heard it from the Illinois staff. Just the intensity it is from March to early May. It's just, it's wild, and the hours that used to be their downtime.
Yeah, most of them not even going on the trail right now for high school, right? Because they got to recruit their own roster or recruit the transfers.
Yeah, those two live weekends are really dead in terms of their evaluations are only half because they're like this the entire time checking the portal, and the two other staff members are on campus hosting a transfer, you know, and they're not even out. So that'll be good, you know, to get, let the college coaches focus on the portal in the spring. I think there's one live period in May. That's the proposal. So that'll alleviate a little bit of it, but yeah, your original question is changed wholeheartedly with, and as a result, there were already fewer Division I players coming out of Illinois because of the talent. And then that is even exasperated by the fact of what I said earlier with all these fifth-year guys that were lurking still around. College coaches didn't want a high school kid for the last 2-3 years. If they could avoid it, they just didn't. Because why am I going to take a high school kid, develop him, have him transfer for one, or if I have an option of taking a kid who's played at, you know, if I'm a high major that's played at George Mason for 3 years, or if I'm at Illinois State, somebody who's played at Austin Peay for 4 years. And I, you know, it's just, you want the high school man, you want the veteran that's been through the wars and the grind and knows what they're getting with them.
You mentioned Illinois State there, Joe. This is the last one I got for you. Do you feel like it all evens out for the mid-major at the end? Because obviously the frustration of developing somebody and then they just go to the next place with the immediate transfer rule, but they also get the people on the way down. So does it even out for them?
No, I don't. I think it's the worst job in college basketball. worst job in college basketball to me is a mid-major head coach and a high major with no NIL money. And there are programs that are struggling NIL money in high major level even still. So I know what you're saying, yes. Yeah. But there's so many question marks with those high majors that are coming down. Either they never played or they didn't fit in, or where you know what you got as a mid-major with this kid that you have recruited, you got to know, you've developed, you've seen them play, they've been in your locker room for 2-3 years. That's hard to lose. And I just think I'm coming out with an article here, Jeremy, in a little bit, that how we're never, ever, 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 ever going to see the Southern Illinois that we saw with from Rich Herron to Bruce Weber to Chris Lowry to it's just those runs will I just can't see ever happening again, because those players that were there were some stud players, some dudes that would never have stuck around.
Yeah,
I mean, some of them might have, but you know, some of those stars were, those are pros. They were going to leave. They were going to go the high major route. And the other thing you can't afford to do too much anymore, Jeremy, at the mid-major level is redshirt. I mean, you're asking yourself for trouble for the most part. If you're sitting the kid, letting him develop, getting nothing out of him, then he comes as a redshirt freshman, plays a little, and then boom, he's gone. It's really hard to go that route. Some cases you still have to, but it's just I feel, and they don't, you know, the mid majors are scrapping. The low majors don't have hardly any NIL. So the mid majors feel like, I mean, there's some that have 100 to 200,000 in their coffers, and some that have chump change. So it's the same way at the high major level too, but not as much.
Yeah. Joe Henderson, City Suburban Hoops Report, Chicago Sun-Times contributor. You can follow him on Twitter at Joe Hoops Report. Joe, always appreciate the chats and the insight, man. Appreciate the time.
Hey, Jeremy. I appreciate any time.
Great stuff as always from Joe Henderson, City Suburban Hoops Report. Yes, he is the goods. Appreciate you all for listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcasts. Of course, you can always check us out on our YouTube channel. We upload most of our interviews right there on YouTube. So if you're a late night YouTube watcher, just get caught down those rabbit holes just like I do, you can follow us on YouTube, hit the subscribe button, hit the notifications bell, hit the like button. We appreciate when you guys do that. It helps us out so much. So please go and do that on our YouTube channel. Of course, you can check out everything at IllinoisInquirer.com, all the content. I talked with Khalil Valentine, the four-star running back, about why he chose Illinois, and he kind of let me in that he was feeling Utah. So what changed his mind after his Illinois official visit? He dives into that. Joy Wagner and I are going deep into our position primers for Illinois football. Joy just put up the tight end primers. I've done wide receivers, running backs, and quarterbacks. Joy will have the offensive line coming up. A lot of fun to dive deep into those things, kind of rehash a little bit about what happened last year, but look forward to who's going to step up at these positions, who's really important at these positions, and what Illinois needs at these positions. So getting you ready for training camp, which is just around the corner. Got Big Ten Media Day in 2 weeks. And with this Northwestern thing, that's going to be a huge topic. I'm really interested to see if Northwestern has any representation there. You know, that's never been the case. Like, even Penn State, after the Paterno thing, like, they showed up for that. That was the next year, I guess, but it's an interesting time, and we'll see what all these coaches have to say about it as well. So that's just 2 weeks away. We have the latest from the recruiting trail on basketball. Eric Bossy has his biggest stock risers. Derek Piper's going to have a scouting report on Jason Jaxtus and more at IlliniInquirer.com. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. We'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.
CBS Sunday, after the Equalizer.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
It's the season finale.
Everyone's looking for something.
Of Tracker.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker, CBS season finale Sunday after the Equalizer on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.